Hi there, and welcome to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Rowan County Judge Executive Harry Clark. Harry, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you very much, and good morning, and thank you for having us.
Now, we want to talk a little bit about the regular fiscal court meeting still being conducted via Zoom because of the COVID-19 pandemic. And I guess just to get started, let's talk a little bit about the numbers and how this pandemic is affecting Rowan County right now.
Well, Rowan County, we did very well when we were healthy at home. And when we transitioned from healthy at home to healthy at work and opened up more retail, we increased our numbers, almost doubled them actually in a short period of time. We are now currently at 18 positive cases in the county. And that is Rowan County. There's been some confusion on that, but it is Rowan County. And of those 18 cases, seven of them have been fully recovered, and the other 11 are still active. They're still following those particular cases and been released. So, you know, it really boils down to when we reopened retail and relaxed the standards some. More gatherings. It was easier to contact this. And the key, and you know, when I watched the news this morning, the national news and all the other news, all of the cases are going up. Some of the states are in a real panic now because they've opened and they have over 2,000 positive cases a day. It's more now than they even had when they were expecting the pandemic. Everyone is saying the same thing, and is wear the mask. The mask is the key to this, and social distancing is still the key to preventing this. So I'm going to ask everybody in the county to please wear a mask. I know it's difficult, and I know sometimes it's hard for me to remember that we need to wear the mask. I'm no different than anybody else, but truly we do need to wear the mask. And I will admit it's difficult, but I'm going to make a renewed effort myself to wear the mask in public, and I'm going to do my best to stay my distance from folks. And I'm going to ask the public to do the same, because we don't want it to be another Florida, North Carolina, Texas, where they're fighting doubled their cases in just a short period of time. And we don't want to see that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do hope to see more people as we go out and about in the community to see more people wearing masks.
Yeah, I think we can, and hopefully a vaccine will come out, and we can ditch the mask and go back to some other kind of normal problem. I'm sure there'll be something else pop up, but I will. I'm going to renew my efforts, and I'd ask Rowan County to do the same.
Well, let's get into the agenda from the fiscal court meeting that was held Tuesday morning. First of all, you heard from the emergency management director, Jim Hampton, gave a report, and he's been really busy during this pandemic.
Jim's been very busy. He's a very active emergency management director. He's, even before this happened, he was very engaged in what was going on around county and the surrounding counties as well, because sometimes what they do affects us. Jim gave us a report. Pretty much what I just said about the 18 positive cases. I think what we took away from that report is they are going to scale down the emergency operations center now because the state is going to do the same. They're going to scale down the emergency operations center, and the Kentucky Department of Health will be moving out at the end of this month. We have had them. We have hosted them for some time. They're a 10 county regional group. So they've been monitoring the 10 counties here, and we hosted those for distribution of the personal protection equipment, as well as some of the other stuff. And so they'll be moving out at the end of the month. EOC will scale their hours back, and things will start hopping out there as far as hopefully about 1 August we'll start working on our building for the ambulance service.
Now, with the report, that report came in, and you just said the ambulance service. The next person the fiscal court heard from was Danny Blevins with EMS director. So I guess that is kind of picking up steam right now, that project.
It is. Danny really didn't discuss that much. He was really more into his director position. which is, to maintain the ambulance service in the condition that it's always been in, which is an excellent. The people manage those, make sure we make the runs when we make them. And his point was that, during the COVID, our runs actually decreased because people were afraid to go to the hospital and doctors, and we didn't do any transfers. As you know, wherever you were at, you're pretty well locked down. You didn't transfer anywhere. So those run numbers are starting to come back up now. So we're seeing a lot more activity in the ambulance service. And so he just wanted to pass that on to us, that we'll see those numbers increase. The ambulance building is on course. We had our bond hearings last week. We have an approved architectural drawing from Frankfurt, so it's been approved. Our drawings have been. So we're really waiting on EOC to wind down and get the contractor. We're expecting to start working, doing the modifications we need to do for the building, probably the first week of August, hopefully somewhere in that time frame. We'll give the contractor the green light, and we hope he'll do that sometime in the first part of August start.
Now, the ambulance service, because they were doing so many fewer runs, do we have any idea about their revenue loss that has happened during the pandemic?
We, unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, we've seen a steady decline in revenue loss in the ambulance service over the period, actually, since I've taken over for the last year. I went back even beyond that. So we've seen a steady decline, actually, in the last 3 years of ambulance funding. The runs usually stay about the same, but it's the actual cost of everything to operate continues to increase. And, you can only charge people so much. And, we still try to provide a service to the community and to the citizens without breaking their bank if they have to pay for this. So, and I think maybe Medicare, Medicaid, those prices have went down some, and some maybe are not as eligible now as they used to be. So we've seen a decrease in revenue from at least the last 3 years, but it will hopefully we'll regain some, at least some numbers will increase, and maybe we can get some of that offset back up. We were down $300,000, for example, here about 3 months ago. We were down $300,000 in the ambulance service and off revenue.
Wow. Now, the next part of the meeting was discussion of the detention center housing contract agreement. As of right now, the Round County Detention Center does house state inmates and also inmates from other counties. So which housing contract, or was it both?
This housing contract is for counties. The state actually has an open door policy, I guess, but but ours is from the surrounding counties, and that is because of the negotiation of the cost per stay per day. It's still $35, been $35 ever since I've been a part of this. Now the state sets their own rate at $31 and 30 some cents a day. So that's why you never see us sign a contract with the state. We sign it with the counties that are most likely to use our jail to house their inmates. And Bath County we've seen an uptick in folks from Bath County using our jail. I think they were probably using Scott County before. And either Scott County has maybe raised their rates some, but I think it's more of a convenience. It's quicker to get them here to the Round County Detention Center. And to be quite honest with you, I think a lot of people are looking at so low a number of cases here in Round County. If you wanted to send somebody to an inmate that possibly wouldn't cost you to break the bank, and if you got COVID, send them here, because Wes has run a really clean jail. We've had no positive cases in our jail. So I'm sure that plays in their mind. It would be in mine if I was looking at another detention center. So the revenue is off because we lost so many state inmates. They released a lot of them, a lot of county inmates. We currently, as of this morning, we have 214 inmates in our detention center, and that's compared to 347 before they started, before COVID-19 started. So you can see it's a tremendous amount of extra cost to us simply because we don't not generating a revenue in inmates.
I know that it wasn't that long ago that I wrote a story about how the jail was in the black for the first time, that it had never been in the black since it had opened, and this was the first time, and it was the number of non-county inmates that were being housed there, and it was very full. But, you know, I know that the cost to the county is the same because you're making payments on that new jail facility. So
it is.
So it's on the taxpayers either way, really.
It is. But now I will say that, you know, that Wes and I made some management moves early on. We laid off some folks, not only just in the county employee side, but Cheddar Coldarn also laid off some folks in the jail. And also, you got to remember that, you know, you're not, it's kind of like having a big family. You're not feeding as many mouths either. So your some of your cost goes down, your food cost, and possibly even some of your heating and cooling cost also go down. But it's nowhere near the offset of what it's cost us. We were cheering it on. We actually went about 3 months there that we never transferred any money from the general fund into any of the other departments, ambulance, road, or jail, or any of it. Of course, that broke that mold pretty quick. We had to start taking money back out of the general fund and transferring into some of these other departments in order to meet their needs. But overall, you know, we've made some moves, and it's not as bad as it could have been.
I know a lot of the departments had a total stop in revenue that was coming in because of the pandemic, and there were still costs associated because there's still the services still had to be done, and also the county had to make different things available for those people who are working there in order to open up with the healthy at work stage for PPE or spit guards at the different stations that are open to the public. So basically, and this was discussed during the meeting, it kind of drained a lot of the finances that were in the general fund at that time.
It does. You know, our revenue slowed, but our cost did not. I mean, we still provide this exact same services that we did before. But before, we were bringing in some additional revenue. And the costs associated with gearing up, you know, I talked about the Emergency Operations Center. That, you know, that came out of our general fund. A lot of this PBE, a lot of these sneeze guards, all of these things that you see in our building, those were taken out of the general fund. Now, we're in hopes that under the CARES Act, we will be reimbursed for a lot of that particular equipment that we've installed. Even our Zoom, our electronic stuff for fiscal court, that was a requirement. I mean, we couldn't just hold fiscal court behind closed doors. For one, you would be unhappy, but the public would be too, and they should be. You know, we should be as open as possible. So the things that we had to do just to have a fiscal court meeting cost money, and that cost came right out of the general fund. But again, you know, we're in hopes that we will get recover some of that through the CARES Act that's been allocated to Round County. And, you know, it's not all gloom and doom. We're struggling. We're coming back, and we'll be a lot smarter when we get back through this.
And on that note, we've got to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Dr. Tony Weaver for Health Matters. This week, Health Matters reports when 511 epidemiologists feel it will be safe to resume our regular activities. We also discuss the American Cancer Society guidelines on diet and cancer. Join us for Real Epidemiologists Don't Shake Hands this weekend and ask your doctor if Health Matters is right for you.
Tune in to Health Matters Saturday mornings at 10 and Sunday mornings at 6 on Morehead State Public Radio.
And we're back here on Open Mic here at Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Rowan County Judge Executive Harry Clark. Harry, thanks again for being here.
Thanks again.
I wanted to talk a little bit more in depth about the CARES Act funding discussion. I know during the fiscal court meeting, you said that the county is eligible for up to a certain amount. And I'm afraid I'm going to say the wrong amount, but I wanted to say $800,000. Does that sound
you're
right?
Really close, Leanne. It's 833,000.
Okay. And but that doesn't mean the county's getting 833,000.
It does not. It's $833,000 to the local government, which they, it is up to the round, the judge executive and the fiscal court to determine how they spend that. And now that's their spin on this. But at the end of the day, they give you a list of the things that's eligible to be spent on. And all of it is COVID related. In one way or other, it has to be related to COVID. You can't just decide that you're going to put blacktop down because you've got this extra money. You can't. It has to be a reimbursement for what it's cost you for COVID. But a fortunate part of that was included in those things that were eligible were your sheriff's deputies and your ambulance service employees, your payroll. Because during this time frame, for about that 2 months, they didn't do anything but COVID. The sheriff's department, they were running all over the place answering calls and doing stuff related to enforcement of COVID restrictions that was initially put on by the governor. And the ambulance service was the only thing most runs they made were, of course, were the emergency runs, which were fewer, but most of it was COVID related. So those pieces of the payroll will be able and eligible for refunds, which we hope holds true. You never know. Everything changes on a daily basis here. So our first application, put it in perspective, our first application for refund was $477,000, and that's sheriff's payroll, all the stuff we've done to stand up emergency operations center, all the things we've done in the courthouse, all of the things that the other departments have done, cleaning supplies, I mean everything down to Clorox wipes. So we're hoping that most of that will be approved, and that'll help us some. Since we've already invested that money, that'll put money back into the general fund that we had to take out in order to meet the COVID requirements.
Any idea how long it's going to take to get those receipts reimbursed?
Well, we sent the application. They review the application to see if everything we have claimed is eligible for reimbursement. They will send us back an approved list of things that we can claim. I have the authority, I got that in fiscal court to sign any and all necessary. We'll do a resolution, which I have the authority to sign that now. So a resolution and what they've allowed us to go, we can send that in for reimbursement. And we're hoping really that, the money is there. So we're hoping that within a reasonable amount of time, 30 to 45 days, we'll get some money back. That's our hope.
The fiscal court also discussed the PACE agreement discussion. It ties into the TIF district funding, correct?
Well, it's really a standalone from the TIF. We look at it as thinking it's part of the TIF because that's where the request generated from was from the TIF district. But in reality, it's a standalone program. We could have done this without TIF being involved or ever even being in the county, or vice versa. TIF could do it without this. This is really just a way for a developer to develop and or a new project or remodel an older project with more energy efficient, more energy efficiency. And that is assessed in a tax roll or onto their property tax. That's assessed a value that's valued. It says, okay, it's worth $2 million. You've improved that. Then there's loan companies that will loan money on that $2 million for that energy efficiency. And the tax amount that it is increased in tax value stands good for that loan. So it's just another part of the loan process that it's another part of the package. So if you don't qualify for enough money to begin with your project, you do these energy efficiency, they'll loan you money to complete it with a different financial package. So we've looked at it. I had the magistrates look at it. And there's really nothing that's going to affect the taxpayers in any way, shape, form, or fashion. It shows up on the tax bill of the development that's done. Nothing won't show up on yours or mine to get me all excited. So they looked at it and we reviewed it, and it doesn't. It looks like it'd be a benefit to us. Bob Helton, the EDC director, said that it would be another good tool for him to have in his toolbox when he's trying to bring people in and are looking for financial options. So we're going to go ahead and move forward. The stipulation I have is that it will be at no cost to the county. And so whoever wants to do this, and if it happens to be Luckett and Farley with TIF, then they'll pay for the attorney to draft the ordinance for us to pass in fiscal court. And they also will do the administrative fees. And, you know, they were upfront. They agreed to do that even when they had asked for it, that they thought that would be fair. So we're not asking them to do anything they hadn't already kind of committed to. And but we won't, we're not going to commit the taxpayers to any more taxes. That's for sure.
Although this is initiated through the TIF district and using for downtown Moorhead, different organizations will be able to use it, including anybody who may be moving into or who may move into in the future out at the industrial park.
What was good about the county doing this, it becomes countywide. If the city certainly had the authority to do it, but the city had to do it within city limits, which would limit your developers to, for this particular financial package in the city limits. So we doing it as a county, this will open up the whole county. So if you wanted to build something out in Elliottville, you could, and it would be eligible for this type of financing package. So it'll be good for the county, and it won't cost us anything. So we're always excited when something's good and it don't cost nothing.
There was a few regular business items on the agenda. The finance director's contract was renewed, and of course, election worker pay was approved. That's going to be a lot lower this year because of the pandemic, at least for the primary.
Well, it will. You know, we're only going to have, I think I talked to Elwood County Clerk, I think they're going to have 15 poll workers. They have, but it will be cheaper, but it's not going to be a lot cheaper because they've had a number of poll workers over at the old city pool working at the polls for the past 2 weeks. And they also have people that are bonded and certified that's back in the clerk's office that's looking at ballots and doing those kind of things. So it'll still cost, but it'll be a little bit cheaper cost for us to do the election this time, mm-hmm. Which is good. And we hope everybody does vote. I mean, really, you know, I did it by paper ballot. I'm very confident because I used to sit on the board that it is above board. There's no cheating. There's nothing you can do with them. And it's just going to make it easier on the clerks and the folks that's trying to tally these counts. But at the end of the day, you're certainly, I encourage you, I don't care how you do it. It's open to vote. If you want to vote in person and you feel better about it, go vote in person, and it's open now, and it will be up until election day. Open on election day, I'm sorry to say, as well.
Right. I saw online that Elwood had posted that more people have requested mail-in ballots than voted in the last election, if the numbers
are correct. Yeah, he said this is going to be and I just talked to him probably 5 minutes before we started our conversation. He's already processed over 4,000 requests for absentee ballots. So it's going to be a huge number. And this is an election that really you don't have that many people vote. So it's going to be a huge, huge number, huge turnout. Mm-hmm. I think we'll learn a lot from this. I think we'll learn how to maybe get some voter turnout out in the future.
It's very interesting the way the world is changing so quickly this year.
Yes, it is.
And unfortunately, that's all the time we have here on Open Mic. Judge Executive Harry Clark, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us this morning.
Thank you, Leanne. And I'll just take 1 second here to say that, you know, I've been very busy with the COVID-19. I would not have ever been able to do this without the excellent staff that is in the background doing most of the work. All of these departments have just absolutely stepped up, and you couldn't ask for a better group of county employees anywhere in this state or probably any other state. And I'll just tell you that it is extremely an honor for me and a privilege for me to be the county judge executive of such a welcoming county and community and the workers that we have here for us. They are always working on your behalf.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Mic. Our show is produced by Greg Jenkins, and our theme music is Turtle in the Creek, composed by Galen Green and performed by The Wooks. Produced by Moorhead State Public Radio with the generous support of listeners just like you. We'll see you next Friday.